The information presented in this podcast is intended to be for entertainment and educational purposes only. It should never be used in place of advice given by a mental health or medical professional or as a substitute for mental health treatment. If you're struggling with a mental health issue, please seek professional help.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of The Fangirl Business.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Krisha. And today we are going to be doing a belated celebration of Pride Month. We are planning to do about a month of episodes, four-ish, probably. It's 2020. Yeah. I don't make commitments.
That's so accurate.
And we are going to start with one of the most beloved of queer characters. We are going to talk about Charlie Bradbury because we just love her so much. But before we get into talking about Charlie, it's been, I was trying to do math because it's been that long, and it's been like 4 months you and I recorded. Yeah, it was March 30th was the last time we sat down and recorded. So it feels like approximately 84,000 years ago.
It does.
It's a different time. I was re-listening to one of our episodes from that day, and it was like, gosh, we've been quarantined for so long. It's been like 3 weeks. And I was like, gosh, that's quaint.
Yes.
So I thought we might check in on how we're doing, you know, how you been.
Yeah. I mean, we've done some live Zoom chats with people. So we've been around a little bit, which was super fun. But yeah, it's been a strange time to be alive. And every time I think that things can't get weirder, it gets weirder.
It really does.
It really does. It really, really does. Mm-hmm. Over here in New Brunswick, things are going pretty well. We have opened up into a 4-province bubble, which just means that within the 4 Atlantic provinces of New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, Newfoundland, and Prince Edward Island, we can kind of travel within that region. Elsewhere in the country, borders are still closed. So we're kind of heading in the right direction here and grateful for that. But there's still social distancing going on. We still have to wear masks going to anywhere public. Personally, I'm doing a lot better. You guys know I was struggling with depression, and we finally found a med that works for me. So things are kind of on the upswing. Yeah. Finally, after 6 months of being super depressed. So that's going well. So I'm encouraged on that front. Yeah. So stuff has been going on. How about you? How are things in your neck of the woods?
Well, I'm in America. So to say that things are on the right track right now would be followed with some laughter or some tears, depending. Things are not so great here. COVID numbers are going up. We're not sure if schools are going to open. Wearing masks is now politicized. You know, it's like people are, just not wanting to wear them as some sort of political statement, which is deeply frustrating. So it's extremely unstable here, I would say. There's also the continued protests going on for Black Lives Matter, which is a source of strength, but also a source of stress, because the protests are peaceful, but there's just a lot of pushback that's concerning and scary. And I know that those are topics that are happening kind of around the world, and those are also topics that you and I are going to talk about at some point, kind of through the lens of Supernatural. We're just going to start with Pride first. I just want to throw out that we're not jumping past that. We're well aware and want to talk about that too. But
absolutely.
Yeah, it's hard. I have 2 kids. They have been quarantined for 4 months now. 5 months, really. toddler and quarantine should never be in the same sentence. Those are just not two words that go together. So it used to be that we would make sure that my kids were not in the background of this podcast. But thank you, Richard Speight Jr., for normalizing having your kid interrupt your podcast 7 times per episode. We're just going to roll with it. So if you hear a screaming kid in the background, just roll with it. Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I wish that I could be like, yeah, no, things are totally fine. They're not. I'm not fine. Mm-hmm. The country's not fine. Nothing about this is fine. But I think that people are trying to find some joy to hold on to because there's not a lot of it these days. So regardless of if anyone's listening, I think that coming back and recording again is something that I needed to have that little bit of joy to grab onto again. So.
Same. And I think, you know, we didn't record during Pride Month because that was really the height of the Black Lives Matter protest. Mm-hmm. And we didn't want to distract from that. And we didn't want to deflect from that. And we, you know, on both of our private platforms, we were really amplifying Black voices. But we also wanted to take the time when it was appropriate to celebrate Pride because LGBTQ people are such a huge demographic within the fandom that it feels good, I think, as a fandom to celebrate Pride Month. And also, on a personal level, this was going to be my first Pride Month since starting my journey of coming out. And so I am very keen to do this as well. So I'm really excited. And I think you're right. I think people are looking for something positive to hold on to. And what can be more positive and uplifting than celebrating Pride in fandom? I mean,
yeah. And, yeah. You know, joy is what fuels us. And it gives us that energy to continue the fight on things that are important.
That's right.
And if you look at things through the lens of intersectionality, until all of us are equal, none of us can be. And so I think it's important from that perspective, too. So
absolutely.
So Charlie. There's so many things to say about Charlie.
So many things to say about her. And when we threw this out to our Twitter page, she was the first name that came up when we were like, we're going to be doing a Pride Month celebration. What would you guys like us to talk about? The number one answer was Charlie. So, absolutely. And I was not sad about that.
Right. It's like, thank you for confirming what we already feel.
Yes. One of the questions that was brought up for us to explore was Charlie's introduction to the show and why it worked so well and why it was so important to have an openly lesbian character on the show. So I thought maybe we could start off with that. What did she bring to the show that hadn't been there before? What are your thoughts on that?
So I'm trying to think back. She came in season 7, right?
She came in season 7
mm-hmm.
in The Girl with the Dungeons and Dragons Tattoo.
Bless.
So she first comes in when the hard drive that Frank left with all of the names and aliases and where Baby is stored ends up at Dick Roman's headquarters. And Charlie is set the task of breaking into the hard drive. That is where we first meet her. And of course, you have that really iconic opening moment where she goes onto the elevator and so is great. Dancing to Walking on Sunshine by Katrina and the Waves. Is like one of my favorite all-time songs. So immediately I connected with her character, because that's a song that I listen to mm-hmm. when I want to rev myself up and be like, okay, I can do it. And she's like listening on her way into work and just jamming out. I was like, okay, I like this character. She agrees to help the Winchesters. Dick Roman has an email server that they need to break into to find out what he's up to and why. But his email server is private and you can only get into it within the building. And she is the only one who can hack it. And she also needs to wipe all of the references to Sam and Dean off of Frank Devereaux's hard drive that she cracked. When she comes out, she has to flirt her way past a guard.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I learned early on when I decided to start coming out about being bisexual is, as a queer person, you never are ever, ever done coming out.
Mm-hmm.
It's everywhere you go, you have to come out to new people all the time. And it's just a very different way of walking through the world that I hadn't really thought through before I started to come out. It was really a key moment where she has to come out under this like really pressure-filled situation where she has to sneak by this guard. I thought that might be a kicking off point for us to start talking about what her character brings to the show in terms of a different viewpoint and as the first openly queer character on the show.
Yeah, I mean, they hadn't had a great track record at this point for the way that they had handled queerness on the show, but even just women, you know, in general.
That's right.
But yeah, I mean, in the early seasons, you know, Dean had made some gay jokes. There was a lot of gendered banter, you know, emasculating that toxic masculinity stuff that we've talked so much about between the brothers, which would have been totally typical for these kinds of people at this time. As the show has gone on, they have evolved, just like we would hope people that were born in our age group that are getting older would also be evolving.
Right.
But I do think that the introduction of Charlie, it was really purposeful. I think first it was to give us a female character that maybe we could actually relate to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like all of the female characters from those early seasons, there were tons of amazing ones, but they were also so intense and they were pretty gritty, you know, like kind of dark, you know, when we're talking about like Ruby and Bella and Meg.
Joe and Ellen.
Yeah. You know, Joe and Ellen, I don't know that I would call them dark, but they definitely had that hard edge.
They're gritty. Yeah.
Charlie was introduced and she was just, oh, and I forgot about Becky. Don't let me forget about Becky.
Oh, we'll come back to Becky.
But Charlie was introduced and she was like this literal ray of sunshine, right? That's why she's listening to that song.
Yeah.
And she was someone that we as women, but also as so many of us as queer women, could see part of ourselves in. And especially as geeky women too. You know, I mean, she just like ticked all of those boxes in a way that was just so like,
I knew that I loved her as soon as she was dancing to Walking on Sunshine. Mm-hmm. But then she says frack, which I was a huge Battlestar Galactica fan. And I was like, oh my gosh, okay, she's in. I am on board the Charlie train. Let's
Hermione.
Go.
Talking about Hermione. Yeah. Heck yeah.
References to the Lord of the Rings. When Dick Roman notices her, the Eye of Sauron is now on her. So there's just all of these wonderful references. I know we're getting a little bit sidetracked, but when you just mentioned Becky, I hadn't realized that Charlie was in a lot of ways making up for Becky. Like, I hadn't put that together until I was just watching this, and then I was like, oh, Charlie is what a real fangirl is and should be, whereas Becky was very obsessive and twisted and went down a really dark path with her fangirling and was, I think, deeply unhappy. Charlie's fangirling brings her joy
and strength
and strength and enriches her, and she finds value in story, whereas Becky found value only in just reducing the story down to one thing, which was sexualizing her fave character. Early on in Charlie's story, Sam literally has a pep talk with her.
I can't do it. Charlie.
Hey, it's Sam.
I'm sorry. I just...
It's okay. Listen.
Who's your favorite Harry Potter character?
Hermione.
Hermione? Well, alright, did Hermione run when Sirius Black was in trouble?
Or when Voldemort attacked Hogwarts?
No, of course not.
What did she do?
She kicked ass.
She actually saves Harry in practically every book. And then she ends up with the wrong...
Stay on track. Okay, so she kicked ass, right?
So then what are you gonna do?
I'm gonna kick it in the ass.
She finds meaning and purpose and strength in the stories that we love, which is what true fangirling is. Now, don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with, you know, having pretty to look at men and women as part of fangirling, but it's not the sole basis of her fangirling. Becky, that was. She reduced it down to that. And on top of that, Becky was kind of dumb, and Charlie is incredibly smart. So all of the things that Becky stereotyped negatively, Charlie kind of redeems through her character, which I had not, my brain hadn't gone there at all.
Yeah.
Until I was just rewatching.
She was definitely an apology. And I think it was definitely a message that Supernatural has given so many times over the years of, we see you.
That's right.
I think that Charlie, for me, was so meaningful because in some ways, I mean, Charlie's way more badass than I'll ever be, but I can relate to her. She's someone that I could totally see myself hanging out with.
Yes.
It was like seeing parts of me hanging out with Sam and Dean and seeing those parts of me being accepted and valued by Sam and Dean. And there was something really lovely in that. Kind of healing in that from the Becky storyline, because the Becky storyline hurt. The early on ones, it was painful. It was like, oh, is that how they see us? Ouch.
Yeah.
And I think that that's why having Charlie be queer was even more meaningful, because it threw Dean for a hot second, but not really, you know? And so that was another way of showing that being seen and being accepted.
Exactly. Like, he rolled with that so quickly. She was like, I like girls. And he was like, okay, let me change my approach to everything.
Like, okay, please hold. All right, here we go.
And then he goes, yes, yes.
As much as Charlie is just a fantastic character in her own right without anything else, what she brings out in Dean when it comes to just the softer pieces of him, the squishy part of him that he tries so hard to shield, the way that she helped him begin to heal from some of his toxic masculine background, but also the queer stuff she brings out in him. My goodness, the subtext that Charlie has brought us with Dean's sexual orientation, you know, just love her on so many levels.
I know.
Which is your favorite of all of the Charlie subtext?
Oh my gosh, there are so many. I think this rewatch in Pac-Man Fever, which is in season 8, episode 20, there's this montage scene where Charlie is trying out these different outfits. To me, there was so much subtext in that in that entire scene, because they kind of flip on their head the idea of the gay best friend looking at the outfits that the straight girl is trying on and giving their opinion on what looks good, because you've got the lesbian girl trying out the outfits and the so-called straight man being like, and in the end he chooses like the most drab kind of outfit possible. But then the part that killed me this time around was she asks directly about Cass. They're talking about the tablets, the demon tablets and the angel tablet. That whole thing is going on, and Cass is busy with like angel tablet stuff. And so she says,
trials? That's never good.
Yeah, and our prophet's in the wind.
What about Castiel? He seems helpful and dreamy.
And what I had not realized about that until this rewatch is Charlie has never met Cass at this point. Mm-hmm. Like, she has not met him. All she's going by is Dean's descriptions of him. And based on what Dean has told her, her perception of Castiel is helpful and dreamy. And I went, oh, okay. Subtext. Uh-huh. And of course, you know, Dean plays it straight. And it's just like, well, he's off doing his own thing, blah, 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 blah. He can't help us right now. And the conversation moves on. So how about you? What's your favorite Charlie subtext moment?
Well, that would have been one of them for sure. But the other one actually doesn't involve Cass. It's in LARP and the Real Girl when Dean had just told Benny that they can't be friends anymore because Sam was jealous. And
don't get me started on that.
I know. Charlie was moping around because she had just broken up with someone. I think that's how that went.
It was Sam because he just left behind Amelia, your favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they were talking about that together.
Okay, so they were talking about Sam's breakup with his hallucination, and I will die on that hill. I really will. And Dean was all depressed because he had just told Benny they could no longer be friends. And Charlie said, oh, did you just go through a breakup too?
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, Dean did not confront, if I remember correctly. It was just like awkward moving on.
But trust me, this life, you can't afford attachments. You just gotta let go.
Are we still talking about Sam, or did you break up with someone too?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what I love about Charlie the most, is that she doesn't push him. She doesn't try to drag anything out of him. But she also gives him those opportunities,
mm-hmm,
to be soft or to express a feeling. And I feel like over the course of their arc, the two of them together, Dean and Charlie, much like Dean and Garth, which is a similar kind of relationship, helping Dean get more in touch with that softer side or that more authentic side, she keeps giving him these opportunities. And then eventually he starts to take them. The I love mm-hmm. you, I know.
Mm-hmm.
Was so beautiful. And he wouldn't have done that in season 7. And he wouldn't have done that with just anyone. But just like with every time he interacts with Garth, he lets Garth get away with a little bit more and hugging and sniffing, you know, whatever it may be. The same was true with Charlie, to the point that he was actually in his Dean way saying, I love you, which is just incredible for him. I loved that, the giving him opportunities without pushing.
Yeah, not trying to make a statement, not pushing. She just picks up on stuff, mm-hmm, and reflects things back,
mm-hmm,
in both of those two scenes. She doesn't pursue it, but she just points up something that he probably hasn't really recognized himself, or if he has, he's not thinking about it too hard,
mm-hmm,
and brings to the surface things that he might not otherwise recognize.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love that about her. In LARP and The Real Girl, they mirror each other a lot. They'll be like walking through the field and there will be all of these women who are beautiful walking by and they'll both be checking them out.
Yep.
But as time goes by, that becomes much more serious. In Pac-Man Fever, there's a moment when they find out that Charlie has been taking care of her mom, who was in a car accident and has been brain dead ever since then. Dean does some research into it, and he's talking to Sam about it, and he says,
Gertrude seemed like a cool mom, too. Kind, strong, taken from her family way too young, remind you anybody?
That's the third episode that she's in. That's the episode where there's that deeper connection made,
mm-hmm,
as somebody who also lost their mom. And that's the episode where we have the hug and the
I love you.
I know.
Noticed on this rewatch, they flip it. In the first two episodes that she's in, it's other people saying to her, I love you. And she says, I know. So Harry, her co-worker, says it in the first episode where she's squirred at a reproduction rights gala.
I love you.
I know.
And in Larp and the Real Girl, the first scene that we see her in, she's fighting a knight.
Yield. I love you.
I know.
So it's this cute part of her character reversing things where she's Han Solo, which I love. But then in the scene with Dean at the end of Pac-Man Fever, she tells Dean, I love you. Mm. And I love that inversion of it. And just like you said, the softness of it all.
I think that she helped us see a side of Dean that we hadn't seen. And I think that she helped Dean get in touch with a side of himself that he hadn't been able to get in touch with. In LARP and the Real Girl, having Dean be the handmaiden. You know, things like that, where the macho stuff from the early seasons, where unless it was John telling him what to do, he was telling everybody else what to do, right? He was always like in that position of authority. He would let some of that stuff go, even if it was only symbolically, with Charlie. You know, he would go shopping. He would be a handmaiden. He would do these different things. Charlie didn't have a ton of episodes. I think that that's true of a lot of the characters that are so intensely important to the fabric of this world. Sometimes we forget that they really didn't have that much screen time.
No, she was only in, I think it was 7 episodes before she died.
She was able to do that much and bring that much in just that short amount of time. Like, if we're gonna get to talking about where her storyline goes, so that we can leave some time to just scream for the last 10 minutes, maybe. is that enough time? She was such an incredible character, completely on her own, right? Like, she helped Sam and Dean, and they helped her, but she was not a damsel in distress. She was able to handle her own business. She kept starting this new life, and then they would show up and she's like, damn it, I liked this one. You know, so she's incredibly strong, incredibly resilient, incredibly resourceful, which is why they kept needing her for different things. I feel like that's where we get into the frustration. Like, of course, supporting characters are there to interact with the main characters. That's the point of them. And to show us different sides and different scenarios. And we needed that. Like, we got to see Dean in a sibling relationship that wasn't Sam. Because he did have other things in common with her. And so we got to see that different side of him, which was just so wonderful for the story and for our main characters. But it felt like in the last season that she was in, like Charlie, she stopped being an individual character there to be a story in her own right that just so happened to intersect with Sam, Dean, and Cass in whatever way, and she was there as purely to move Dean's story into a dark place. And I feel like that's why so many people are so angry about her death. Because she brought this really necessary beauty and balance and acceptance to the show. And Dean was never going to go fully dark. That's just not how it works, right? It's never that Dean's going to go fully dark, the end. And that's the end of the show. We always knew he's going to come back. But she couldn't. Not really.
Right.
And I feel like that was an unworthy sacrifice for a single storyline.
I think so too. I think there was so much about her death that was disappointing. It was another female character that was sacrificed to further the plot of men, mm-hmm. right? She died off screen and her body was used as sort of like a horror moment. So it becomes about her body and not about her.
Yeah, you know it's like mean? Shock value rather than...
Yeah.
Even the pyre was still not about her, because that's where Dean said it should be Sam up there. So it was about like bro drama and about how yeah. far Dean had fallen, strayed, whatever words you want to use. So she didn't even get that honoring exit that many other characters get, which was also completely enraging, basically.
Yeah. It was them falling back into patterns with women on the show that have been highly problematic. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, the death being the thing to spur on the heroes, so their mom and Jessica, and so the meaning of the woman being their death rather than their life, and the shock value where it becomes more about the body than the person, the mm-hmm. gore than the person. You know, we all remember the woman on the ceiling burning. Mm-hmm. We all remember that moment of Charlie in the bathtub. Sam, his eulogy feels really forced, and I think Dean calls him out on that.
Mm-hmm. Charlie, we're gonna miss you. You were the best. And I'm so sorry.
Shut up. You got her killed. You don't get to apologize.
You think I'm... You think I'm ever gonna forgive myself for that?
You wanna know what I think? I think it should be you up there, not her.
But again, it becomes about the bro drama mm-hmm. rather than about saying goodbye to Charlie. So I think you're right on that. And layered on top of that is the fact that she was the one queer character mm-hmm. that had been on the show. So it's not only that they're continuing and perpetuating a track record of using women as signifiers rather than characters. It becomes, on top of that, about killing off representation. And so I think that's why the rage was so high. All of those things combined. You had the loss of another woman, you had the stripping away of who that character was unto their own selves, and then you had the loss of this lesbian character who was the only representation of queer characters on the show. So I should say the only out
yes
representation. I was pissed, and I'm still not over them killing off Charlie.
No.
They tried to appease fans by bringing back Charlie through AU Charlie, through Apocalypse World Charlie. Mm-hmm. But she was so different, and she was so damaged. One of the things that I loved about our Charlie was she was scared, but she would do the thing anyway. She would find the courage within her to do the right thing. Stopping the Leviathans, or trying to prevent more people from Moondor being killed, or to go on the adventure with Dorothy and kill the witch, or whatever it happened to be. And this Charlie was planning her exit strategy through the whole episode where we get to really see her. She's planning on ditching because she's been so damaged, because she's gone through so much.
So glad this is my last case.
What?
I told myself I'd help you out for a while, at least until everyone got really settled, and then I'm out.
To do what? To go where?
Away. From monsters, from people, from... I'll go live in a mountaintop or something. As long as there's good Wi-Fi.
I was glad that they brought Felicia Day back, and I was glad that we got to see more of her, but she wasn't our Charlie, so that kind of ended up ringing hollow to me. Mm. How did you feel about AU Charlie?
I wanted to dislike her because I was still mad, and I will forever be mad, but I still loved her. Charlie in any form. I just think that Felicia Day is so brilliant, and she was able to be Charlie, but in different circumstances, which is just, that's really hard, you know, to be the same character, but just someone who has gone through different things. And so, I mean, I think the important thing in my mind with AU Charlie is that they allowed us to get to know her. You know, she told her story to Sam, and it was heartbreaking. And it was heartbreaking because we love her so much.
I know.
You know, and she had found that love. She found Kara. And I'm like, ugh, where is she? Go find her.
I know.
There must be a version somewhere in our world. Like, she was planning an exit strategy, but she did what needed to be done, and she fought the way that the fight needed to be fought. And I felt like that was Charlie. With all of the loss that she experienced, I didn't blame her for a minute for wanting to just nope out, but she didn't. She talked about it. But when push came to shove, she did what needed to be done, which seemed very Charlie to me. So.
She did. The way that I read it, it was kind of like one last hunt before she headed out into her own personal sunset. And they kind of left it open at the end as to whether or not she would keep on keeping on, or if she would go and retreat to the mountaintop kind of deal.
Don't leave. Hear me out. Sure, some people can do bad things when they're desperate or scared, but I'm not saying all people are good people, or even that most people are, but if we help people, then maybe they'll help people and all that. And that's worth it. Even with all the tears and death, it's worth it.
Just to be super clear, I am not like the Flame Monster. But I'll think about staying.
I enjoyed that episode a lot, and I enjoyed what they did with her. That was another Dick Spate episode. Mm-hmm. And the scene at the end where they have the fly people come in and get their deceased fly person,
like,
just
you do.
Like you do. I teared up during that.
Yeah, because I mean,
gotta be honest,
welcome to Supernatural.
He made it visually just beautiful and haunting, and I was like, it's a bunch of fly people wearing like beekeeper, how am I crying? What is going on? So I liked her, but at the same time, it made me miss our Charlie even more because she was so bitter and so broken and so sad, and she couldn't be who our Charlie was. Isn't it weird, though, that just the fact that Dean and Sam exist in their world resulted in a happy-go-lucky, vivacious Charlie, and the lack of them in this other universe led to this other sad, broken Charlie. So,
I mean, the Winchesters, we've seen it time and again, they make people better.
Yeah, that's right. And like Garth, I feel like Charlie made our Winchesters better as well.
So much.
Yeah.
The introduction of Charlie was so refreshing, and it's so comforting.
Mm-hmm.
That feeling of, oh gosh, she's like me. You know, like she's like me, but like way cooler. And having her be an apology for Becky, and having her be a queer character that so many of us can relate to, and knowing that that was likely very purposeful in her character's introduction, I think that that's why so many of us took it personally when she was killed.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, oh, here is this wonderful thing for you to connect to and feel comforted by, and we're going to kill her. You know, I mean, it's just hard not to take that personally.
It really is.
I'm sure that they weren't thinking about it like that. This was years ago, so a different writing team. But that's, I think, how a lot of folks experienced that death. And I'll die mad about that. That rage is not going anywhere anytime soon. But the anger that I feel over how her story ended doesn't take away from how much I love her.
That's right.
I just, you know, repress that bit unless I'm doing a rewatch, and then I just sit in the rewatch and seethe, and then I rant on social media a little bit, and then it's like, no, that didn't happen. Nope, she's still alive and well, and everything's fine, and she's going to Comic-Con and getting drunk and getting a new tattoo, and she's going to call Dean and ask him questions that make him awkward. And it's going to be awesome. And we didn't even talk about yet the scene where she meets Cass, because that's definitely one of my favorites, too. It's like just the cutest thing I've ever seen.
I mean, yes, because she's so excited to meet him, and he's just so awkward and Cass.
We're back, bitches. Whoa. Is that who I think it is?
Charlie, Cass. Charlie.
I thought you'd be shorter.
When I get these to the fridge.
Heard you got your mojo back.
Yes, my grace. It's been restored.
So, do you think you could do anything about my carpal tunnel? Is that it?
Your carpal tunnel and your bullet wound are now healed. You may want to continue wearing your wrist brace at night, though.
Do we just become best friends?
You want them to jump in and start eating popcorn together and be relating Dean stories to each other.
I'm sure that they did. When we talk about Dean, like, Dean has had a lot of friendships over the years, but I feel like the closest friends that he's had has been Cass and Charlie. And what I love about that is that they are polar opposites. If you look at Cass and you look at Charlie, like, they could not be more different. Cass is so awkward and Charlie's just down for it. And she's so embraced who she is and her sexuality. Like, she knows she's hot and she's happy to use that. Whereas Cass is wearing 27 layers and, like, just does not quite know how to navigate any of that, which we see time and again when women hit on him.
Rowena.
We must assemble our most powerful allies to rescue our family and
confront the Archangel Michael. Now, he's in an alternate universe, so...
Oh, the handsome angel is there, isn't he?
Hello, Tweety Pie.
Hello.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, and the waitress, the Lord.
And how about you, handsome?
Sunrise special, please.
Nice.
But I do think that's another thing that I really love about Charlie. They created a character who is female, who is incredibly strong and incredibly smart and incredibly confident in her sexuality. Like, it's not like she shied away from talking about sex. Good Lord, she hooked up a ton. Go her. Mm-hmm. But she wasn't sexualized.
Yes,
and
that's right.
Man, that's a hard thing to find. Like, you see the Wonder Woman type, right? Oh, she's so strong and she's a superhero and she's also wearing nothing. Mm-hmm. Which is, like, cool if that's what she wants to do. But in the comic, she's wearing nothing because it was aimed at men.
That's right.
They were able to really capture in Charlie many facets of a really authentic geek queer woman. You know, I mean, like, all of the facets of that. That was refreshing, too.
Along those lines, in LARP and The Real Girl, we find out that Gilda is being forced to do things against her will. And also, she's a really hot fairy. Mm-hmm. And the next scene that we see is when Dean comes bursting into the tent, followed by Sam. The camera follows his gaze, and it goes to the bed where Charlie and Gilda are making out. I loved what they did in that scene, because we know that Dean has had threesomes or even foursomes or fivesomes.
Group sex. Let's go with that.
Yeah, group sex. Early on, there was a scene where he has sex with two women at once. Mm-hmm. It's done in that way where it's the fantasy. Mm-hmm. It's all about two women being together, but really it's about the man.
Right.
And in this scene, Charlie is like, whoa, like, what do you think you're doing bursting in here? And she says something cute, like, you know, if the tents are rocking, don't come a knocking or whatever.
She's very sibling. Like, she's just like, oh my God, get out of here.
Right, exactly. And he's sort of like put back on his heels. So the setup is very much male fantasy. Oh, you stumble in on two women making out and, oh, what will happen next kind of thing. But then it's put back firmly within, like, this is a private moment between two women. This is not something that you're invited into, dude.
Right.
And so it totally flips the dynamics of what we had in earlier seasons. Mm-hmm. And here it reflects what is more often the case in real life, yeah. Which is the two women together are just wanting to be two women together. Men are not necessary in this scenario. Yeah. Not that I have anything against threesomes, but like...
Well, that's not what they were doing. Like, he was literally not invited.
Exactly. It changed the dynamic, so it wasn't about the man in the room. Mm-hmm. It was about the women in the room and about their sexuality, not about his sexuality. And I think that is part of what Charlie brought to the show.
Like, overall. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, her own sexuality, but also a sense of what queer sexuality is. Rather than this fetishized straight male fantasy, this is what the reality of it is.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that you brought up is Charlie consistently saves herself. LARP and the real girl, she saves the damsel in distress. She saves the fairy by taking the knife and stabbing it into the book, which is what is controlling the fairy, and destroying the book. In season 9, episode 4, which is the slumber party episode, she's the one who kills the wicked witch and sends her back. And she does that all by herself. The guys are overtaken by the witch and become sort of zombie puppets. And she's the one that goes and actually finds the witch and stabs her with the magic ruby slippers.
Now heal!
And kills her and stops the flying monkeys from coming in. And there's this... I know, right?
Sometimes it's just like, goodness. We are having real conversations about this. Okay, continue.
Here we are. At the end, she's struggling to pull the door shut because the wind is sucking against her and the flying monkeys are coming at her. And so often in television, you have a scene like that where the girl is struggling to do something and the guy will come in and help and fix the situation. And that's not what happens in this situation. She does it by herself. She struggles with the door and then she closes it.
Mm-hmm.
And she shuts the monkeys out. The flying monkeys do not make it into the bunker. That would have been a whole other thing. So I love that about Charlie, is that she consistently saves herself. And I think that was another part of why her ending sucked so much, because she let herself be cornered and then she was just slaughtered. And it just seemed like such a disservice to her ingenuity.
Yeah, because she was careless. That's not like her. You know, like, she was mad at Rowena, and so she needed a break. And so she went out knowing it was dangerous. I just feel like she's a bit more logical than that. She doesn't tend to throw her life around when she's just annoyed.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like she would have put on some noise-canceling headphones, cranked the music, and just bunkered down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like they dumbed her down a little bit to kill her too, which is also enraging.
Yeah. The other thing that I thought was really interesting about having her as a queer character on the show was they consistently had everyone assume that she's straight, which I hadn't noticed before. We've been talking a lot between the two of us and reading a lot on Twitter and researching and learning about the idea of how making assumptions about people is actually a form of the hegemony, the majority being exclusionary, and how those are microaggressions in and of themselves. And we've been talking about that a lot in the context of race. But as I was watching through this, I was noticing how over and over and over, people kept assuming that Charlie would be straight. Dean and Sam do. And then all throughout LARP and The Real Girl, all of these men are pursuing the queen, thinking that she is available for them. So that assumption of males, of the availability of women, and that she's straight. When you see throughout the entirety of that episode, she's being very open about the fact that she is into women throughout the whole thing. She's flirting with women. She's looking at women. She's not hiding it.
My queen.
Noticing a lot of these maidens checking you out.
What? I can't shut this down. It's good to be queen.
Yet all of these men keep assuming that she is someone who would be into them.
Or if not assuming, then they feel like, well, I'll shoot my shot because maybe she just hasn't found the right man yet. The typical assumption that queer women face.
What I thought was really interesting was that the villain, Jerry, who goes by the name Baltar, has gone dark side and done all of this horrific stuff and is killing people because he wants to win the queen and become her king.
Oh, Lord.
My plan was, after getting rid of all of my competition, to win the battle tomorrow, convincing the queen that I should be her king.
I was watching that and thinking about male aggression towards women and how they were taking what was this really fun episode and making this really profound statement about how instead of actually seeing the woman who was in front of them, who's very clearly interested in women as herself, they're seeing her as a commodity that they can take and mm-hmm. and capture and win and then bind their own power through the taking of her. And so I think that that was such a really powerful story where they flipped that on its head, where the villain is the male who makes assumptions and the actual story where she finds love and attraction with a female fae. She's the one that saves the heroine in distress mm-hmm. and in the end wins her kingdom for herself.
They played with a lot of gender roles in that episode.
Exactly.
A lot of flipping of scripts. I think it's interesting too, tying it to what we're seeing in season 15. That idea of the privileged white man as the villain, you know, that entitled man who doesn't understand how things have changed. Like when it comes to Chuck, he doesn't understand how his own characters have changed and evolved and healed and grown. So that's interesting that it's like a mini taste of that seasons before.
Absolutely. Also, just like randomly, I would love to know what Charlie and Rowena got up to during their road trip together.
That was AU Charlie, right?
Yeah. I like to think that those two had a lot of fun, like redhead double trouble.
Well, there was a deleted scene. Did you hear about that?
No.
Oh my. Well, this is perfect for Pride Month. I believe it was Ruth that talked about how, maybe I can't remember which one talked about it, but it was at a con. That there was a deleted scene about Rowena and Charlie hooking up. That was like canonically no. So. But it got cut.
Of course it got cut.
But it doesn't matter because somebody said it and now it's canon.
Yes! Yes!
So, that told us something about Rowena's sexuality and just the idea of Rowena and Charlie together. Like, oh my gosh.
They would have much fun.
I would desperately love to have a scene where Sam and Dean were made aware of the fact that Rowena and Charlie were romantically involved, because I think that watching the emotions that would have gone over both of their faces would be just unbelievably amazing.
You know how Rowena talked about sixth base?
Yes, or fifth base, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was it fifth or was it sixth?
I thought it was fifth.
I can't remember.
Past,
it might have been fifth base.
Past home.
Okay. I wasn't sure if she was like two.
Maybe she's, I mean, I'm sure she's made it out to double digits, let's be honest.
I mean, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I love the idea of these two really confident women.
That mean different things to Sam and Dean. That's
yeah.
like the part that, I mean, yes, the power. Like, for sure the power. That would get them. But just like the different dynamics that they have with the different characters. I just would love to see where they go with that. Like Dean wanting to be protective, but Charlie would kill him. And like Sam being like, okay. Well, I don't know. I think it would be really funny.
It would be. It would be very enjoyable. All right. Is there anything else that we want to cover with Charlie? We've talked about how relatable she was. We've talked about just the issues that she raised as an LGBTQ character how she addressed some legacy issues from early on in the show, and how she brought a different perspective in terms of people making assumptions about sexuality, in terms of confronting stereotypes and people fetishizing women and being together, in terms of just her intelligence and powerfulness and her comfortableness in her own skin. Is there anything else that we want to talk about with regards to Charlie?
You know, I don't know that I have any new areas, just that I think that Charlie as a character was very healing for Dean, but I think she was also very healing for me. And seeing how well loved she was, being who she was, being a geek, being smart, being queer, being awkward, and having those things be loved and celebrated, I just think was really healing for me as a person who shares some of those traits, again, with the volume turned down. But also beyond that, getting to watch her go to Oz as the geek fangirl that I am, getting to see someone like me going and doing these incredible fantasy things. You know, I'm not watching somebody that doesn't look like me or doesn't act like, there's plenty of people who go do all of those things, but those people aren't like me. And that's where we get into, you know, representation matters.
I think that Charlie was one of those characters that feels like home and feels like comfort. And I think that's why we connect with her, because she is so familiar and we are comfortable with her. We feel that sense of comfort. I love her so much.
She's like us.
She is like us. All right, so I think that we'll wrap it there for this episode. We will have more Pride-related episodes to come that we'll be recording in the near future. And you can message us and stay up to date with the latest on our Twitter and Instagram pages, which are both at TheFangirlBiz. That's B-I-Z or B-I-Z. We will see you again soon. And until then, carry on, wayward friends. Happy Pride. We love you guys. Bye.
Beg for a scene where Sam and Dean got to be made aware that Charlie and Rowena were romantically involved. Like, to watch the expressions that would go across their faces at the implications of such a thing would be glorious to watch.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, hi. My cat jumped up onto my computer and turned it onto airplane mode.
Oh.
You f***er.